and 30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center's Durable Medical Equipment Loan and Supply Closet needs donations. They're looking for bath benches, shower chairs, bed rails, walkers, and other things. Call 605-6667.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, and Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our topic today is an update on hunger in Southeast Wisconsin. My guests are Sharon Palmaville, the executive of the Sharing Center in Kenosha County, and Sherry Tussler, the executive of the Hunger Task Force, who has a Southeastern Wisconsin perspective as well as a statewide understanding of the issue. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, let's dive right into this. Why don't we start with you, Sherry Tussler of the Hunger Task Force. What's the dimension of the issue of hunger right now here in Kenosha County? And as you know, we broadcast to Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties. So I know you have a Southeastern Wisconsin perspective, so we'll be excited to hear about how you see the overall picture and maybe a county-by-county breakdown if there are significant differences.
There actually are. As we all know, Racine and Kenosha counties are very different. I grew up in the area in Racine and worked in Kenosha for quite a long time. In Racine, we have a food bank, Racine County Food Bank, and that food bank disperses food to food pantries across Racine County and has recently been called upon to also disperse food through Kenosha County. And Kenosha County is still working on building a fledgling food bank. Even though there's one needed, there isn't a food bank in Kenosha County. What is a food bank and what's the difference between that and a food pantry? The food bank supplies the food to the food pantries. So it's a distribution center, a place where the food is stored and then allocated to each food pantry across the community. And Kenosha is struggling with that right now because each of the pantries has to source its own food from local stores and local donors. And so that creates some challenges with, frankly, some competition between the western side of the county and Kenosha proper, the city. And it also creates difficulties for the people visiting a food pantry who maybe not be able to source the same amounts or quality of food depending upon where they visit a food pantry. And so
how many people need this service?
In Kenosha County? I'm going to let Sharon answer that question because I don't have your current numbers, but I do know that we are supplying large amounts of food to Racine, Kenosha, and Walworth counties through a state funded program called the Badger Box. So Sharon, do you want to talk about hunger in Kenosha?
Absolutely. So my name is Sharon Palmaville. I'm the executive director of the Sharing Center. We are a crisis center and food pantry that serves the western half of Kenosha County. So what we did see when the pandemic began is a 25% increase in our county for people who have enrolled in food share, which is food share, food stamps. It's also called SNAP. It has a couple different names, but it's really the primary program that helps people who need additional food each month be able to purchase it on their own. So there was a huge increase when the pandemic began, and that number of hunger here in Kenosha County is actually rising still, even with those benefits still in place. So pantries in Kenosha County have seen most of them right about where they were pre-pandemic, but with all the federal benefits still in place. And so we're really concerned here in our area why we're seeing such an increased need, even with the influx of federal benefits still available.
The Shalom Center just posted on Facebook a few days ago photographs of their empty pantry shelves. We've had their executive, Tamara Coleman, on the air not too many weeks ago. And I have been at board meetings just in the past few days where members of the board are active with a food pantry at their local church say that they've never seen demand so high ever, far higher than last summer. Sherry, is this typical now that there is a bump in demand here in the middle of the summer when we usually don't think of the food as being quite so much a problem, with produce more readily available and so forth in these federal programs? Or are things considerably different now from the way they were maybe even a year or two ago? What's going on here? Give us an idea, if you can, of the dimensions of the issue of hunger and also food insecurity, of course, here in Southeast Wisconsin. And maybe with your deep knowledge, you can help me and help our listeners understand beyond the superficial level. Thank you.
Sure, absolutely. There are two different things that people should think about. At this time of year, hunger is going to be at an all-time high. And that is because schools have been out of session. Kids have not had access to the school breakfast and school lunch program. Half of all the people that are being served in Kenosha County right now are children. And so those kids are eating their parents out of house and home, frankly. And as soon as school goes back into session, some of those numbers should drop back down. Kenosha has never been real good at providing the Summer Food Service Program, which is another federal program. Sharon was successful with it last summer through some rule breaking that she did in a creative way to get meals to rural kids. But the second issue that's going on is recession. We don't like to talk about it. We're saying inflation right now. Everything costs more. And what happens with your food buying budget is it's the last thing that you'll spend your money on. You'll put a roof over your head. You'll pay your utility bill. You'll buy your medicine. And then finally, you'll buy your food. And with whatever meager amount of money you have left, you're going to try to stretch that. And if you can stretch it by visiting a food pantry, because the food pantries, frankly, have been super welcoming over the course of the pandemic, then you're going to visit that food pantry. You're going to incorporate the use of a pantry into your budgeting process. And that's, I think, what's happening right now in Kenosha County. There should not be empty shelves, and especially not at Shalom, of all places. But we also need to address the fact that there are other federal supports that are present that maybe people in Kenosha aren't using at the level that they should.
Sharon, how does that seem to you? And you have a point of view or a application of that information that would apply to us in this particular county of Kenosha?
I absolutely do. Yeah. So when the pandemic began and there was an increase in benefits for food share, our numbers here at our food pantry dropped 80%. So when the food share program was funded fully, and our families are extremely well connected to this program, it cut the need for people to come here to get food by 80%. And that's enormous. Like, if there's one program that can cut need in a community by 80%, that's a good program. And that those benefits have still been at their maximum. It's not going to stay that way, but they've been that way for a while. And I would also say, you know, empty shelves in the pantry. At the end of a distribution, we all have empty shelves in a pantry. That's not uncommon until you restock those shelves. And as we were looking last year to figure out how are we going to do some maybe childhood meals here in the western part of the county, because our schools out here generally do not qualify to do a summer meal program. It's just the level of poverty isn't quite high enough across the western part of the county. And so as we did this pilot program, we capped it out in about 2 days on how many people we could serve through this pilot. It was 1,500 children. In the end, we did almost 90,000 meals for the summer through a very small pilot program. That's the level.
Wow.
That's
wow.
The need in this community, yes. Then we partnered with Salem Grade School just to market what they were doing with grab-and-go meals and a summer meal program. So between the two of us, we did over 150,000 meals last summer, and that is a historical number for our area. And we are in a community that typically does not qualify to serve summer meals. So the level of need truly is high, just like Sherry is talking about, in the summertime when rural children can't get to a school for breakfast and lunch.
Sure, who paid for all those meals?
The federal government paid for them. It was 100% reimbursable through the federal nutrition program. They were getting breakfast and lunch delivered once a week in a box, just like a Blue Apron box of meals. And it was the student meal program, the Blue Apron version, 100% qualified and funded through the federal government.
Now, you were talking about access to these programs. If a program is out there, what is it required to be accessing this program? And are there barriers to access? Is it a barrier of just knowledge? Is it a barrier of people objecting to taking a handout? Is it a barrier of some other kind, language? There must be reasons and things that are interventions that one could do through your agencies and through cooperating partners in each of our counties, I would expect. Could you shed a little light on that for us, please?
Sure. You want to tell them quickly, our listeners, about what happened in Sheboygan County with the food share advocates?
Sure. Sheboygan County brought on board a person to work inside of their food pantry that would advocate for food share enrollment. And suddenly their numbers started to increase. And so people may not know, or they may not be able to get to the welfare office, or they may think it's undignified to go to the welfare office, or they may be embarrassed that somebody will see them using a SNAP card at the checkout. And all of those things can be overcome with, I think, the right level of support and counseling. And now that food share program has grown tremendously. Sharon alluded to higher levels of benefits because of a combined federal and state public health emergency that remain in place. Food share benefits for a single individual are now at about $250 a month. It used to be $20 a month. So Len, if you talk about access, like, do I want to go through all of this undignified, embarrassing, weird stuff to get $20? No. Will I do it for $250? Yeah. And if I'm a family of four, will I do it for $900? Wow, that's like my rent money. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to apply. So food share, before the pandemic, was viewed as a negative program, that bums were on it, that no goods were on it. We were drug testing people. We were making them work requirements to get food. And then suddenly a pandemic happened and all kinds of people lost their jobs. And then we knew someone, a friend, a family member who was on food share, and it made the difference between them remaining housed or becoming homeless. It made ends meet for them. And that's the purpose of the food share program. And so those pandemic or emergency payments, those higher level payments, will be in place through at least January 13th, 2023. And so if you are not on food share and you are struggling to make ends meet, if you are skipping meals, now is the time to apply.
This higher rate of reimbursement is relatively new, and we know that it takes, if you know anything about public opinion, big changes like that don't penetrate the consciousness of everyone immediately. It takes time. It usually takes anywhere from a year to 18 months or 2 years for it to be widely known among all strata of the population. So what could we do to make sure that more of us know? Have there been any other examples of spreading this information, and how difficult is it to enroll? What's the process? If I were to need to access this program, what would I do?
You can go online. It's really simple. And if you don't use the internet, you can use the telephone and you can apply over the telephone. They've modernized the whole process completely. It used to be that you had to go to the Human Services Department, sit there and wait maybe for a while and then get interviewed face to face. And it all just would seem terribly embarrassing. Not intentionally, but it just is. So now you can go online. It's www.wisconsin.access.gov. And the access.gov website has a whole series of icons and sorts of things. And you just answer a bunch of questions about your income and your expenses. Food share is about income and expenses. And so, again, if you're skipping meals and you think you're too high income, maybe you haven't thought about your expenses. Because if you don't have enough money for food, you're probably eligible for food share. And so we encourage people to go online or use a telephone to apply. They can initiate an application and then later turn in the proofs that they need. They call it verification. So like a rent receipt or a mortgage statement, your utility bill, your check stub. And then you get the benefits and you come up for a review every 6 months and annually. It's not terribly complicated.
Are tax returns required?
No.
And what, do you happen to know offhand what the phone number is, or maybe we could give it before the end of the program?
Yeah, we're in a different area than Sharon, so she could probably tell you the number for the consortium.
Yes. Okay, we'll do that. Mm-hmm. I wonder if it could be any easier from what you what you're describing. It sounds like it's really greatly changed, and greatly changed from the impression I think many people have of the system.
Right. And there aren't paper coupons anymore. So you're not standing at the grocery store paying with something that isn't cash. You can swipe and you can go to the self-service space and you can swipe. And so nobody's even knowing that you're using the green card. It's called the Quest card in the state of Wisconsin. And so you can pay for your groceries using that. Food share can only be used to buy food. There are a lot of people who think that it can be used to pay your rent or maybe to buy cigarettes or non-food items, and it can't. So people then use their limited resources to purchase things like toilet paper and soap.
My guests on Community Matters this morning, talking about hunger in Southeast Wisconsin, are Sharon Palmerville, the executive of the Sharing Center in Kenosha County, and Sherry Tussler, executive of the Hunger Task Force. We're so glad to have these two with us because they have a depth of understanding both on the micro level here in southeastern Wisconsin and on the macro level that we don't usually get a chance to speak with. Now, I wonder if we could just move on a little bit more and talk about what are there other programs that people need to be worried about or should be concerned about accessing or recommending and steering people to access to help with their finances at this time? Because the I think the grocery prices are what astonishes me right now, is how that is escalating so tremendously. And if you don't pack a lunch, you're being forced to pack a lunch these days more and more, because trying to stop at a fast food place, an inexpensive fast food place now, that's almost like, you know, it doesn't make sense anymore, that phrase, because it's not that inexpensive any longer. It's quite different from the way it was a few years back. So what else could people be doing and thinking about, Sharon?
Well, there's four programs that we always recommend to families coming in. Number one is the WIC program. WIC provides additional food spending power for pregnant moms or people with children under the age of 6 years old. So it's some extra food for young children and pregnant mothers. The second program would be free and reduced lunch program within the schools. One of our schools started this week, so schools are going to be back in session if they aren't already within the next week or two. So just to make sure that our families are registered for free and reduced lunches if they qualify. I tell them just apply just to see. You just never quite know if you qualify or you don't. The third one would be energy assistance, and that window for application begins in September. Benefits get distributed starting in October, but that's a credit directly onto your gas or electric bill to help offset some of the increased costs for heating your home for the winter. And then the fourth one always is the food share program.
Could you share with us what we would do in Western Kenosha County? We would contact you. In Eastern Kenosha County, who would we contact? In Walworth and Racine counties, is there an agency that is sort of the intake, or is it now more that there's multiple points of intake to get into these programs?
Well, the great thing is you can get into all of them now online, or you can call from home and get registered for these programs as well. If you were here in Western Kenosha County, I just tell people to show up here and we'll get them registered when they're here. They don't need to bring anything with them. The best thing they can do is just show up anytime that we're open. If they were elsewhere and they wanted to actually visit someplace, it would be Racine Kenosha Community Action is the agency that oversees the WIC program for Kenosha County. UMOS on 52nd Street handles energy assistance, and free and reduced lunches is directly through your school.
Sharon, isn't it true that some of your schools are community eligibility provision schools as well?
We have one out here that is, and that would be Lakewood, which is on the furthest west end. They are the only one at this point that I know of that qualifies for community eligibility, which is a certain level then of low-income children that attend the school.
I believe Kenosha Unified as well, right?
Absolutely.
And so, Len, what that means is that parents don't have to fill out forms for free or reduced price meals because every child in the school is eligible based on the level of poverty of all of the children combined. And so if that level is 60% or greater, the entire community is eligible. So they call it the community eligibility provision. And so some schools, including Kenosha Unified, Racine Unified, Milwaukee Public Schools, are community eligibility schools, and so those forms are no longer required. Individual schools and school districts, especially in rural areas like Western Kenosha and Western Racine County, still may have application processes. We encourage people to fill out those applications. Children should not be made to sit in a lunchroom and not be fed. It's just,
it happens.
It's not okay.
That's horrifying.
Well, and we also encourage school breakfast, and that one's been around for a long, long time and is still not fully enrolled or even offered in so many schools. And here in Milwaukee, at the Milwaukee Public Schools, every school provides breakfast at the start of the day. We know that breakfast means that you're learning, you're well-fed, and you're prepared to be educated. And so providing breakfast to kids just makes sense. And it's pretty hit or miss out there in Western Kenosha County.
The Hunger Task Force came with us one time, Len, to one of our local schools who wanted to improve their breakfast program, and they went from a 15% use rate for their breakfast program to nearly 80% by making two simple changes to the program, and that was the time that they provided it and where they provided it. So it went from being something you had to access as soon as you got off the bus and go to the lunchroom and sit down and eat breakfast and try to make it to your class on time, to everybody eats breakfast during your first homeroom period. Everybody eats and they eat in the classroom, and it went from 50 to almost 80% use. And that's exactly what you're looking for, is about that 80% range. Then you know that, and that means that 80% of the kids that are eating lunch are also eating breakfast. So you want to try to get those as close as you can to the same percentage. And it works. It absolutely works.
We know it promotes learning.
Yes.
We know that. Mm-hmm. We have research that proves that it's not just common sense anymore. What are the barriers? You know, if this isn't being offered and accessed as much as it should be in Kenosha, Racine, Walworth, wherever in the state, what does it take to get such a program? And if your community isn't a qualified community, are there other options? Can you explain that a little bit more to the listener who wants to know, I don't like this situation, I want to get involved. What is it that needs to happen? What do they need to suggest the powers that be take a look at?
We can start with the lunch lady, and she's going to tell you whether or not it's an option inside of her school, and she'll tell you what the barriers are. We can't afford it. It's not in the budget. The principal says no. The janitor doesn't want the food in the classroom. You'll know what the barrier is. And then you attack that barrier and say, as a parent, as a concerned citizen, as someone who just cares about kids, what am I going to do? Well, you're going to call your principal, and then you're going to call your school board member. And then you're going to get a resolution together in front of the school board and say, we're committed to providing full access to breakfast for all of our children. We're committed to breakfast in the classroom. We're committed to making sure there's more fresh fruit that's sourced locally on the plate for our children. Our kids here in Milwaukee asked if they could just get rid of sporks. That was a school board motion to eliminate the spork. They were like, how can you eat meat with a spork? Fair. So we like to listen to kids too. And I always encourage parents and anybody to just walk into a school, sit down and eat a school meal. And if you think it's a good meal, yay, thank a lunch lady. And if you think it could stand some improvement, work on getting it improved. Because just as we budget for books, we budget for uniforms for the football team, we budget for all kinds of stuff in a school system, we can budget for food. It shouldn't be just the reimbursement from the federal government and then just the food that we can afford with that. We can add money to that budget, and we can source our foods locally, and we can make sure our kids are eating healthy foods and that they're ready to learn, prepared, and then let's get them a lunch on top of it. And frankly, Len, there's also another program that happens after school. Let's say those kids are on a football team or a forensics or something like that, and they're staying after school. You can provide after school supper. Wow.
I'm entirely ignorant of after school supper. I thought I was paying attention to this topic, but I am just puzzled now and embarrassed. Tell me about it.
It's called the Child and Adult Care Food Program. I uncomplicate it for people by saying it's called the Child Care Food Program. So if children are in your care after school, as they might be for a daycare or an after-school program run by the Boys and Girls Club or the Y, that's a daycare. A school is often a daycare because there is that provider there. And then they can bill that federal program and provide a full lunch or a full supper, or they can just provide a snack. But for a lot of kids in athletics, it really should be a supper because they're burning so many calories playing on that sports team.
And what does it take to establish that program? Are there qualifications that make it difficult for a school board to institute? Is it a community income level issue? Is it that there has to be a local match? Does you have to get the state legislature to make it happen? What are the barriers to that, if any? If 100% of the schools aren't participating in all these programs, makes me ask why? What are the barriers? What's stopping them?
They would say that the federal reimbursement isn't enough to provide a full quality meal. And that's, again, back to that budgeting issue. And we've got to make a decision to feed our kids. We want them to grow up to be healthy. We want them to learn. We want them to be good employees one day. And that all starts with a healthy diet. And so it's a little bit of money. It's not a lot of bit of money. It's just a little bit of money.
Well, it's an investment, isn't it? I think one could certainly look at it as a entrepreneurial investment in the outcome of your local and the state's economy, because we're in competition with Minnesota and there's 49 other states that you could go to raise your children in.
That's a fact.
Now, I wonder if we could turn from the hunger issue to some other related issues that your organizations serve, and what you can tell us about what the trends are and maybe some of the success stories, maybe not only locally, but around the state, and what you see the outlook is for the future, because you address many things. You do a variety of services for children besides women, infants, and children. You have assistance for homeless, you have assistance for rent and electricity, utilities, water to keep people in their homes, because that's the first priority, is to try to keep people in their homes and not let them become homeless, is it not? So I wonder if you would just tell us a little bit more about what your organizations do. I'm going to start with Sharon, whose organization serves Western Kenosha County, but the services you provide are not at all different from those that other agencies provide in each of our listening areas, even those across the border in Lake County, Illinois, that also hear me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do, I call us the hub of services in Western Kenosha County. So if there's a service that's located in Kenosha County or for people in Wisconsin, we are the place where they can come to get registered for that program or receive services immediately. We're a little bit different than our city-based organizations because most of those nonprofits and service providers are within a 5 or 10 minute drive of all of those pantries in the city of Kenosha. But out here, there really isn't much as far as other service providers. We have a office at 45 and Highway 50 in Bristol. That's a satellite office of Kenosha County Human Services. And then there's our agency, and that's it for the 200 square miles of Western Kenosha County. So we are that hub. Anything you are looking for, you can access it through us. And that's one way why we're a little bit different than most of our counterparts that are in the city of Kenosha. We've seen in the last, most of this has started in April, is when I started to see an increase in people looking for help with food. It's somewhat more common to have people looking for utility help in April, as that moratorium for disconnections ends usually around April 15th. So we'll see an increase in that, but it usually levels off in a week or two, but it hasn't this year. We have more homeless people than ever. We have more people that are sleeping in their cars or sleeping outside. We have more people who are looking for help with disconnections and eviction notices. And the amount of services to meet those needs just don't exist because it's an expensive proposition. We do the best we can. We're well coordinated with the other providers in Kenosha County. We're part of something called the Wisconsin Balance of State Continuum of Care, which connects anybody who's doing anything around homelessness and housing. They network us, so we're all working together as a team and providing the same services to people no matter where they go to access help.
I noticed that you provide services to seniors and being one, just like you to tell us, there's more of us coming, you know, us baby boomers who are a remarkable number of whom are returning to Kenosha and Racine, as I've been discovering from my high school classmates. What are you doing for seniors? And I'm going to ask similar questions of Sherry from her perch.
Yeah, we do a couple things real specifically for seniors. We do have Aging and Disability Resource Center provides us a Medicare and Medicaid navigator. So certain times of the year when you can change your Medicare plan, we sit our families down if they're interested in doing so, just to make sure that they have the right plan for their needs. We want to make sure they're maximizing their all those programs to the best that they can. We offer something called a stock box program here, which is an extra box of commodities they receive every month for our lowest income seniors. And I'm going to have Sherry talk a little bit about that because that's a really great program that is also underutilized. But it's a box of things like tuna and milk and cereal and fruits and vegetables. It's just a little bit extra food they're just the basics, but very well utilized and solid proteins and low salts and low sugar. So that's a great program as well. You know, believe it or not, and this is for everybody, but our seniors often take advantage of it a lot, cat food and dog food. They have pets. It's difficult to feed their pets. And so we provide cat food and dog food and cat litter because we want them to not have to eat a little bit less because they're feeding their own food to their pets. So we do offer that to everybody. We have a lot of specific hygiene items for our seniors should they be in need of that. And of course, we have everything else that's available here, and we'll hand tailor what we get and what we distribute according to the needs for our folks.
So people access that by just going to the agency or starting the process on the web or by phone?
I just tell people to show up. That's all you got to do. You just get yourself through the door and we'll take it from there. No hoops to jump through, no anything. We'll tell you what we need the next time you come in, but the first time, just come on. That's all you have to do.
And I noticed that you have no barrier to showing up because you can arrange for free transportation.
We do. We work with Western Kenosha County Transit, and they will do one of two things. They'll either pick you up at your door for free and bring you here and take you back home, or if you know exactly what you need and want, they will actually deliver to your home for free. So they've been a great partner for us that really takes away the cost of that transportation. If that's a barrier for people, completely takes it away.
And for those who are temporarily or permanently have some disability, that mean the delivery, free delivery, is exceptionally important. I think everyone my age has gone through at least a few weeks, if not months, when we needed that kind of assistance from somewhere, from someone. Now, Sherry Tussler, I wanted to go back to you now, and we could start with the senior voucher program that you have in your agency that probably is very similar to what Sharon was talking about, but you do more than just hunger. I wonder if you want to now give us a broader perspective of what the Hunger Task Force does.
Sure. Our urban area is very actually like Sharon's rural area because transportation issues can also be very difficult for seniors living in urban areas. They may be in subsidized public housing in a high rise. And so we actually bring the food to them. And we not only do the stock box program, which is actually a federal program called the Commodity Supplemental Food Program. We serve about 10,000 seniors in about half of the overall state of Wisconsin. And so we're building those boxes every single month and distributing them, not only here in Milwaukee County, but in 26 other counties. And so they'll go out to seniors here in Milwaukee County. We've been able to establish a DoorDash delivery system. And so DoorDash is actually providing free delivery on a monthly basis for Stockbox to people who can't get out and get it delivered to them. We also bring the Stockboxes directly to concentrated areas of public housing, and we pair that with our Piggly Wiggly mobile market. So we have a grocery store that is a NASCAR trailer, single aisle, and people get on board and they can shop for fresh foods, produce, meat, dairy, on board the Piggly Wiggly market. So we say that they can take their elevator to the grocery store. So they'll come down to get their stock box, which is mostly shelf-stable foods, and then they can use their debit card or their Quest card to purchase fresh foods that combine to make meals for them. That mobile market has a federal incentive program connected to it that meets the senior or the shopper, frankly, because anyone can shop the mobile market in the middle. It literally reduces the cost of their food by 50%. So that's a really big deal. And it's been super successful. We've been operating it now for 8 years. People love it. It's scheduled on a monthly basis and goes from one apartment building to the next. So I might be at your place, Len, on Tuesdays and at Sharon's place on a Wednesday, but you'll know that we're showing up and you'll save your benefit card and benefits to buy the food on the mobile market, which has been freshly stocked.
I think that I've heard that such a plan was going to be tested or was coming in our communities of Racine and Kenosha. Am I not right about that? Or
you were totally right about that. And we tested it. It was just like, oh my God, then there came a pandemic. And we weren't allowed. I mean, we literally here in Milwaukee, they called the police on us when we would pull up because we would create a crowd and we needed social distancing, right? It didn't do as well in Racine and Kenosha, not in all spaces. And the reason it didn't is because the public housing isn't quite as concentrated. And so it needs about 25 or 30 customers spending money over the course of 90 minutes in order for the entrepreneur, which is Piggly Wiggly, to be successful as a store format. Otherwise, they're wasting all that food that they're onboarding there. And so that second mobile market is sitting in my parking lot, and we're thinking about another home for it right now. But it didn't work in Kenosha.
I'm horrified.
I'm sad.
Because I know the need is here. Mm-hmm. And I know the needs in Racine. I don't know about Racine, whether they're doing it in Racine or not. But I know that. Okay, so I know you and I know that the need exists in all of our communities. That's sad that there are some economic barriers, and I suppose that then becomes the province of other human development services issues and spiritual organizations, communities of faith to help with this. What could fill that gap in Racine and Kenosha?
Well, let's imagine for a minute our friends at Shalom Center with their empty shelves and the mobile market showing up there. And rather than saying, here's all your free food, you say, here's how you sign up for Food Share. Now we're giving you half off using your Food Share card. And you get to pick the foods that you want as opposed to me giving you the foods that I have. It's far more dignified. But we have to make the decision as food bankers, food pantries, soup kitchens, homeless shelters, that we have to put ourselves out of business. And we have to come up with logic models for getting people food that are dignified and that use fully those federal benefits that are available, instead of communicating to our local communities that charity is the answer. Because charity will always exist, but it shouldn't exist at the level that it does right now. And we should not think of the pantry as an alternative to the grocery store.
Well, I've spent 52 years working with not-for-profit charitable organizations of every kind, including educational and human development services. And there isn't enough philanthropy to do 100% of the need. And although there could be, there isn't, and there's not going to be any time in the future that I can predict. You have other services of the Hunger Task Force that you would like to mention before we start to talk about how people can roll up their sleeves and get involved, Sherry?
Sure. What I'd like to say is that there are 144 more Sharons out there. The Hunger Task Force operates something called the Hunger Relief Federation of Wisconsin. And at the beginning of the pandemic, we had 33 members that were just food pantry coordinators somewhere out in the space of Wisconsin that needed additional support, technical assistance, information, just a shoulder to cry on sometimes. And then the pandemic happened, and 12 tribal nations joined the Hunger Relief Federation looking for food. Advocacy groups, public policy groups, and food pantries joined. And we were able to leverage about 11 million pounds of food from the Trump administration to move out to those communities across the state. So while Milwaukee serves as the hub for the southeastern region, we have hubs in Green Bay, La Crosse, Lac des Flambeaux, Red Cliff, Washera, the list goes on. And we continue to move food out to those groups to make sure that people living in rural, remote, or indigenous spaces that are low income have access to food. So that's been sort of a big project during the pandemic.
That's terrific. I'd like to know now, if I were a volunteer, Sharon, go ahead.
Yeah, really quick. I think most people in Kenosha County would know of the Hunger Task Force because of the Dairy Recovery Program. You want to tell people about that really quick, because that was just phenomenal what you guys did there.
Sure. At the very beginning of the pandemic, we heard from the media that people were spilling their milk. Farmers didn't have an outlet because they were selling their milk to restaurants and schools, which were closed. And so milk is going on the ground, and Hunger Task Force invested that very first month $1 million in the purchase of milk, milk, cheese, butter, cottage cheese, yogurt. And we named it the Dairy Recovery Program because in the end we joined with Wisconsin dairy farmers through their Dairy Farmer Union and Federation and the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And we identified spaces where farmers were at risk of bankruptcy because they didn't have an outlet. And we purchased their products and we moved them across the state to feed hungry people. So we connected all those dots. We bought almost $7 million worth of dairy over the course of about 14 months and moved it across the state to feed hungry people. So it was really a sort of Wisconsin Works kind of approach.
All right. That's terrific. Now, how do we get in touch with you? If I want to volunteer, if I want to donate items in kind or donate money, what do I do? And what do you want us to do? I'm going to start with you, Sharon. Sharon is with the Sharing Center, so we know, okay?
So here in Western Kenosha County, if you are local and looking to volunteer, just give us a call, 262-298-5535, or you can visit our website at thesharingcenter.net. Cash contributions are huge. We, like you said in the beginning, we can stretch a dollar far greater than most people can when they go to the grocery store, so we're always looking for donations of financial support, because those really do make the difference on how great we can make an impact here in our community.
Sherry, for the Hunger Task Force, what can I do to help, and how would you want us to participate?
People can go to hungertaskforce.org. It's pretty simple. And they can click on volunteer, donate. We use about 15,000 volunteers a year, Len. We use them at our farm. We use them to build those stock boxes. Some of them are working in our pantry network. Some of them are helping do outdoor distributions to this day. So warm bodies that want to work are always welcome. Cash contributions are used to purchase food. We buy food by the truckload and we give it away, like we did with the Dairy Recovery Program. But there's one other thing that people should think about, and that's their voice. Hunger in Wisconsin. It's bad, right? It's a bad idea. But more importantly, why is it happening? Like, our farmers are producing enough food to export to other nations, but one in four kids in the city is going hungry. And that's wrong. And that's where your voice comes in. And your voice can take the form of you going to that school board meeting. Your voice could take the form of asking your elected official what they're doing to end hunger in your community. So you can have a vote. That's all I got left.
The one thing I have is to access food share benefits online, or if you want to call, the place you could call is the Wisconsin Kenosha Racine partnership called WKRP, and that phone number is 888-794-5820, and that's how you can apply on the phone for food share benefits.
Thank you to my guest, Sharon Bonneville, the executive of the Sharing Center in Kenosha County, and along with Sharon Palmerville, Sherry Tussler. Sherry Tussler is the executive of the Hunger Task Force. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta urging you to get informed and get involved. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support comes from the UW Parkside Foreign Film Series, welcoming patrons back to the cinema starting September 15th. Information about season subscriptions, which include 14 films and 3 guest passes, is at uwp.edu/Rita or at the Rita box office Monday through Friday, 12 to 4.
Support for classical music on WGTD comes from